You ready for Basecamp Fitness's best deal yet? 7 days for $7. That's right, 7 days for $7. It's time to double down on your fitness goals and snag this offer before it's gone. Call or text Basecamp Fitness at 913-232-9770 or go to basecampfitness.com to learn more.
Impress your friends, amaze your coworkers, make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
I'm going to tell you what you need to know.
Fourth quarter of the program begins right now. It's brought to you by our friends at Worth Harley Davidson, I-29, just south of the airport, right around that Tiffany Springs exit. Best selection of Harley Davidson motorcycles anywhere. You can find it right there on I-29. Took a car dealership, made it bigger, stocked a full Harley Davidson motorcycles, new and used. Never been a better time to get that Harley of your dreams than right now at Worth Harley Davidson, I-29 and Tiffany Springs. Go by and check it out. In fact, if you've got a VIN number on anything, they'll trade for it. I'm talking about trailers. I'm talking about RVs, cars, boats. Somebody tried to trade a plane for a Harley once. If it's got a VIN, they'll talk to you. I'm not going to say that.
Love it.
You know, I got the 747. I'm trying. I don't know what'll happen. If you've got one, I don't know. Find out. Rick Worth and the guys, you'll know the moment you walk in the door, you are family at Worth Harley Davidson. And don't forget, coming up on Friday, going to be at the Rally House in Independence. If you want Chiefs gear, they are bringing in new shirts, new hoodies, new everything, Super Bowl gear coming in.
Good swag.
Like every hour, they come in these huge boxes and unload them. So even if you were over at Rally House yesterday, go by today because there's going to be new gear there. It's going quick, but they're restocking quick. So if you didn't find what you wanted yesterday, give it a day or two. Go back and check it out because there will be new fashions there. We'll be live Friday from 2 to 6 at the location there in Independence, right there by the Independence Mall. Not in it, but by it. That Rally House, great Rally House, big Rally House. You can come on by and say hello. You can check out everything online. 16 locations online. It's rallyhouse.com. That's rallyhouse.com. We will see you there on Friday. A little college basketball tonight. KU and K-State last night. Jayhawks 12-point winners tonight. Mizzou, 8 o'clock. They're 10-point favorites as they host LSU. That action on,
SEC Network.
That's where they usually are. SEC Network. So check that out tonight. To
LSU
see if the,
is struggling. Won their first.
On the struggle bus, they would say.
Won their first SEC game and have lost 7 straight, plus a loss of the Big 12 SEC Challenge last week.
Need to win this one. Don't give back what you gained with Iowa State by dropping this. LSU did beat. Who did they beat in the Big 12 Challenge?
Well, they lost in the Big 12. They've lost 8 straight. They've lost 7 straight in the SEC and lost in the Big 12 Challenge. They lost to.
Well, who am I thinking of? Who had the. West Virginia took down.
Auburn, I think, didn't they? Or
they took down Auburn. That wasn't giant, though. Who took out Alabama?
Oklahoma.
OU, that's
why rolled them by
a considerable
30.
Margin. And OU then last night, Alabama took those frustrations out by almost beating Vanderbilt by 60.
They were pissed.
Nate Oates does kind of play that 3 or right at the bucket NBA style to where you've talked about that if you're cold and the other team's hot, you're setting yourself up for a blowout.
There's a lot more ways to get lopsided scores in basketball today. Because if you're hot and they're average, you blow them out. Yeah. If you're cold and they're average, you get blown out. You know, you got 3 different levels to be at when it comes down to the shooting, and you both got to find it there. 2/3 of the time, you're not on the same level. And then you got the differentiation in teams. That's where we're going. We talk about it all the time. NBA playoffs were a disaster last year. I mean, we had nothing but blowouts everywhere.
By the way, LSU, they lost by 8 at home to Texas Tech, who finally won their first Big 12 game a couple nights ago. Here are the scores of the 4 games before that. 60-40, 77-56, 67-49, 106-66 at Alabama. Disaster. They got to win this game, and they got to win it big. They don't have to, but you really want to see them.
And I think they will.
Take them apart, I think.
And
so
I think
too.
They will.
Has LSU been the most and maybe even only program affected from the FBI investigation?
Well, there were no sanctions given to them. They just fired the coach.
They fired Will Wade,
eventually.
That was his name, right? Will Wade.
Yeah.
And I don't even know who the hell is the coach now and where did he come from. Anybody?
I have no idea.
Bueller? I got no idea.
Yeah, it's
Matt McMahon. That's right. He was at.
I was going to guess one of the fake Jayhawk quarterback names Curtis gave and Frank opinions at one time.
It's one of the guys I kind of was thinking about for Mizzou. He was at Murray State.
Murray State did so well giving Iowa State a coach.
I think you called it. You're like, well, he got great. He got
did he coach John Morant or
yeah,
he was there.
He was there since. Oh, maybe not. He was there for 15. Was Morant there?
Yeah, Morant was there.
Okay.
But the coach before him and the coach now was the guy who went to Iowa State and tanked.
Steve Prohm.
Yeah, Steve Prohm. He's back at Murray State.
Yeah.
I think, listen, if you're LSU, you're not patient. Tang, Dennis Gates, all you need to know. There's no reason to suck.
That changes things quite a bit.
Well, I'm recruiting. We're having to build relationships. Well, then you're an idiot. Idiot. But we'll see. We'll give him time. I don't think he's winning tonight. I think Mizzou handles business tonight. Jayhawks handled business last night, getting the win and cover over the K-State Wildcats. Bill Self saying after the game that he was pretty happy with the way the team played.
I actually thought we did some good things early. We shot it well early and, of course, had some rhythm. And we didn't shoot it near as well the second half and probably didn't execute as well the second half. But we did some good things. Their guys are hard to guard now. Noel and Johnson are hard to guard. And Tomlin, when he gets going downhill, he's long strides. He's hard to stay in front. They've got a good team. And I actually thought we did a good job for the most part. And our bench was terrific. Best our bench has been all year.
No argument here.
No, we talked about it. And if that bench is going to start playing like that, then they get really hard to beat.
19-16?
Yeah.
That'll get it done.
Jalen Wilson leading the way for the Jayhawks, as he often does. He scored 133 points now in his last five games. That's the most in a five-game stretch by a Kansas player in Big 12 history. Bill Self said Wilson was great during that stretch, even though his team wasn't.
133 is a pretty good number for a five-game stretch. And unfortunately, we go 2-3. In that five games, and he's usually scored the most points when we've labored the most offensively, which is a sign of a good player. So tonight we were able to spread the wealth a little bit, but still he was the main guy that got us off to a good start.
2-3, but they've won the last two.
Yeah.
Riding the ship after three straight losses, beginning with that loss in Manhattan, so they avenge that. Collectively, 172 points scored by the Kansas Jayhawks in the two games, 161 by the K-State Wildcats. Is that an accurate differentiation after 80 minutes of basketball?
Probably. Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean,
I think so. I think that's. That's probably where the two teams are.
Yeah.
K-State can still get better, right?
Sure.
And as we know, Kansas got hammered by Kentucky last year and won the national championship. So no one loss precludes anybody from advancing deep in the NCAA tournament.
As I pointed out in our first hour, the last time K-State had a loss like this was against TCU on a Saturday, and 3 days later they came back and beat Kansas on their home court. So that this is the second time they've been in that spot, but they were successful the first time.
Jerome Tang was teed up during the game, gets the technical foul. He was asked if that was by design.
Well, I didn't want to get a technical. I think I didn't mind getting a technical, though. I've been in here too many times where I feel like the crowd impacts the referees, and they're human beings, okay? And this is no knock on them, because we shot more free throws than they shot. We made more free throws than they did. But it's like when you shoot the free throws that matter. So I just want them to know that I did not feel like the calls were being even on both ends. Now, I think John gave me the text so that he wanted to let me know, bruh, I will kick you out of this game if you keep acting like that. And so he got his point across, and I hope I got a little of my point across.
Did he have a point?
Any coach, and I'm ready to field mentions at my Twitter page, but any coach who goes on the road, particularly against a team like Kansas, a blue blood that packs the house, that's probably has a gripe about the officials on most given nights. Home teams get more calls than road teams. Home teams with big crowds get a little bit more of an advantage. Any particular call? It seemed like a somewhat fairly officiated game, but I'm sure he had a reason for it. But as he said, he didn't want to, but he didn't mind it. But
I I don't want to continue picking on the previous K-State basketball coach, but how good was that answer from Tang after somewhat wishy-washy answers about officiating from Bruce Weber? I love that answer from Tang.
Yeah, I agree. Just his whole delivery. I mean, we talked about it a lot. I mean, Bruce Weber just does not inspire.
And Tang, that's a guy who, he didn't call out officials, he didn't get himself fined, but you know, is any recruit, any players now know Jerome Tang, they've played for him, they know he'll fight for him. Is any recruit going to hear that and go, that's a guy who's going to fight for me? He's going to demand a lot of me, but when he feels I'm not being treated fairly, he's going to fight for me.
I didn't have any problem with the officiating last night. I saw a guy that was trying to fire up his team, and then is then saying afterwards, "Hey, let's play to the hometown crowd, his crowd, who's every fan base thinks they got screwed in every loss by the officials. Let's play up to that, and let's earn some brownie points with the kids." I think it was a very calculated response and a calculated move to get the technical.
And even the response of the question was probably somewhat calculated, or at least it shows an amazing bit of there's a word I'm looking for that I can't find now. Intuitiveness or instinct. That's instinct. A very instinctive answer, I think. Okay. There's a lot of that, I think, in Jerome Tang. He's been in the game long enough to kind of gain those things for sure.
Go ahead.
Well, I remember years ago, I think it was 2013. It might have even been that game where the refs missed the charge by Elijah Johnson late in Ames. But anyway, Jesse Newell was the one who tweeted this. He was covering the team at the time, and it was a Bill Self got a technical foul. I believe it was against Iowa State. And immediately, Jesse Newell had a view of Self, and as soon as they gave him the tee, he turned around to the crowd behind him and winked at him.
Yeah.
So, you know, Tang, coaches are smart. They know who's officiating. They know their personalities. The smart coaches and the super competitive ones know that's another element of the game I can play to.
Tang, a lot of positivity in his approach to coaching. He was asked why it's important to have a positive mindset after a loss.
What good does it do if to be negative? Like, how much does it help our guys? Like, my job is to help get them ready and me being ticked off, you know, I'll do that by myself when I watch the film. But the first person I'll be ticked off at is myself. I'm going to look and see what I could have done better. And then we as a staff can look at what we could have done better. And then we're going to try and help our guys. Those dudes love Kansas State. They love playing basketball. They love to compete. They don't go out there on purpose and, you know, make mistakes. And we don't either as a staff. And then the people we compete against are really good. And so it happens. So I just, it doesn't do me any good to be negative.
I don't think there's anything you need to add to that statement. Mm-hmm. One thing I thought I did have is, though, the distinctive nature of the delivery.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it's an accent, you know.
There is a distinctive dialect. I can't place it. And there's a texture in his voice that you can hear.
Guys. And just guy, that, he just turns guys bit, into like a multi-syllable guys. Word.
And there's just a little bit of gravel in there. Just
I don't know.
I can listen to him talk all day.
I enjoy listening to him, too. I like it, too.
Absolutely,
and it's almost – it's maybe this is what makes it so pleasing. It's he's not soft-spoken, but there's a softness to the delivery.
There's
maybe
a velvety
comfort.
Tone.
Maybe that's what I'm looking for, yeah.
That's what
there's
I would say.
There's a velvet
say.
To it, yeah.
It's a pleasant voice, but – His delivery adds even more to the character of him. The gray hair, he's got a cool, you know, gray hair's cool. I don't know if you people know this, but.
Not as cool as bald, but it's up there.
Good point. But very distinctive, you know, look, a distinctive sound.
He sounds the way professional motivational speakers sound when they talk off the cuff. That's the kind of delivery he has. It really is something.
And he sounds like somebody who, when he does yell, similar to Andy Reid, probably doesn't do it often, but uses it to where players go, oh, my God, I've got him yelling. Something awful has happened.
Well, I think the good ones are in control of most things, and it's not very often that there's something that they're not controlling, so they're usually not that upset within their own their own team. But great to hear him break everything.
But the
down.
Reason why he's winning, the main reason why he's winning, is because he know his knowledge of the sport, his ability to teach players, and the ability, part of what we're hearing there and talking about, is to go get guys. It isn't just that he has a cool sound, because Vance Wilson, who was the Broncos coach a couple years, had the greatest voice I've ever heard in a coach. Couldn't coach. This guy has all of that, and he can coach. Perfect package.
In case you missed it, and you now crawled out from under the rock that you live in, we'll let you hear it. Tom Brady called it a career this morning. Was just pretty much said, okay, peace out. Not going to do a big thing. Did that last year. This is self, right?
This is Brady.
Okay, because your throw says
no.
Self is pretty happy with the way his team played.
I copied that over there and forgot to change the throw.
So just to make sure, this is the announcement. I was like, okay, yeah, I thought this was it. But then I read that, and I'm like, well, this is Tom Brady. This morning, recording on his phone and sending it out to the masses that he's done.
Good morning, guys. I'll get to the point right away. I'm retiring for good. I know the process was a pretty big deal last time, so when I woke up this morning, I figured I'd just press record and let you guys know first. So I won't be long-winded. You only get one super emotional retirement essay, and I used mine up last year. So really thank you guys so much to every single one of you for supporting me, my family, my friends, my teammates, my competitors. I could go on forever. There's too many. Thank you guys for allowing me to live my absolute dream. I wouldn't change a thing. Love you all.
Choked up there. You could tell he was tearing up at the end. And, interesting timing. We, of course, being the heartless pigs that we are, have determined that it's because he is going to tell Greg Olson to hit the bricks, jackass. I'm calling the Super Bowl. It is on Fox. He has a contract with Fox for whenever he gives up the game. I will bet money. Who wants the other side? Even money. Tom Brady calls the Super Bowl.
I'll oppose that.
How much?
A dollar.
The kiddie table's over there.
$10.
$10.
$10.
You give me 2-1.
You said even money.
I've seen if I could slide it by. All right, $10.
I'm at 12.
$10 he calls the Super Bowl.
Yep.
There you go.
Well, hang on. Instead of what's he, or just he's on the broadcast?
He's.
The first thing you meant, he told Soto that Greg Olson's going to be gone. He's going to be in Greg Olson's place. That's the bet I'm opposing. He might be on the broadcast. Hey, Super Bowl, time to introduce the newest member of Fox NFL's coverage, Tom Brady. That will probably happen. But him and Greg Olson's shoes, no way. That's the bet I made.
No, I said on the broadcast.
Oh. Well, what the hell?
No, I didn't say that, but that's what I want to bet.
That's what it sounded like.
I stand by what I said, yeah. Okay. Olson hits the bricks. Yeah. Brady calls the game.
Can we call it? What if they send, let's compromise, what if he's in the booth, Olson down on the sidelines?
No.
I think it'll be a three-man booth. I think he'll be in the booth. They'll introduce him at some point during the broadcast.
That's a no bet. Okay. If they're both in the booth, it's a no bet.
Right.
It's just a push.
Yeah.
Just Brady, I win. Just Olson in the booth, you win.
Cool.
They go to Brady on the sideline or in the pregame or something. That doesn't count.
Yeah.
In the booth.
Yeah.
Fair?
Fair.
Okay.
And I think it'll be a no bet because I think they'll have him up there.
All right, we'll talk to Seth Kizer from The Athletic, as chief of the North Newsletter, get his breakdown of the Kansas City Chiefs' big win over the Bengals. We do it next here in the program.
He's a pastor who likes the passing game, an attorney who enjoys play action more than class action, and he loves to watch Chiefs game tape for hours and hours and hours. He's Seth Kizer of The Athletic on the program.
Yes, indeed. Let's talk to the man, the myth, the legend, Seth Kizer, author of the Chief of the North newsletter. Great breakdown of the Kansas City Chiefs. He's brought to you by our friends at the University of Kansas Health System. Did you know that the Sports Medicine and Performance Center offers sports performance classes for youths? That's right, high school athletes, personal training for adults. They do it all. Check out the classes. How about athletes ages 8 to 12? They're great developmental classes. 60-minute sessions start at just $15. They focus on the fundamentals of athletic development, like sprinting techniques, linear acceleration, deceleration, change of direction. Also expose the young athletes to multiple variations of movement patterns, jumping, throwing, crawling, enhancing total body strength, power, and, of course, the ability to just be a better athlete. You can learn more at KansasHealthSystem.com/sportsperformance. Let's welcome in our man, Seth Kaiser. He joins us right now here in the program. Seth, how are you, sir?
I am doing very, very well, sir. And how about yourself?
Not bad. How'd the carpet handle your pacing during this game? Because I've seen some videos. I'm pretty sure you were up and moving during this one.
I was moving quite a bit. There was a lot going on. We've got a couch in a spot where I can kind of walk circles around it. And my wonderful wife Jazz asked me about midway through like the second quarter. She looks at me and she goes, "Can I ask you a question?" And like I was like, "Yeah, of course." You know, trying to like keep my cool. And she goes, "What would happen for you to enjoy football?" And I was just like, "That's a great question. I don't know." And so it was extremely tense. But then she found out a few hours later, as I shrieked and clapped and high-fived my kids, and it's all worth it in the end, I think.
Yeah, I think so when it's all said and done. I'm not usually a pacer. In fact, the last game I paced for was the 2019, the Super Bowl in January of
sure.
February of 20 was the last time that I was up pacing. I was up pacing on this one as well. My wife just laughed at me and told me I was a clown.
I may sit still and just arms full, just stew and look at the thing.
You are bedridden.
That's, no, but I my nervousness does not transform into pacing. Mine's just like I just have to stare at the TV and be nervous for 4 hours.
Adam, what are you? 40-pound bag of Doritos? What are we talking about?
No, I am quiet, shockingly quiet for anybody who knows me during tense games. I say nothing. I stare ahead, and I find a position that if I always say that in this moment, I'm not superstitious. When the adrenaline's going and the logic is out the window, I'll go, "All right, well, I was sitting this way when the Chiefs were doing well, so let me go back to that."
He was at my house, and he is silent. There's nothing. And then all of a sudden, he screams something out. You're like, what the hell is what going on?
Oh, for the Jags game, that's right.
It's like, yeah, you know, it was Tony when he almost made it into the end zone late on the Chiefs' second-half touchdown drive.
You haven't heard him for an hour. You're literally just, like, "What? Who the hell is this?" Yeah. It's like, give me a break.
Oh, Adam's here.
Seth,
yeah, I know.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I tend to be relatively loud throughout. Like, I'll clap at good plays, but not like a clap as though I were there. Like, I'm applauding them because I know they can't hear me. I'm not insane. But the part, the more I learn about football, the angrier games make me, because certain things happen, like when the refs did not throw a flag initially on that Burrow intentional grounding.
Oh,
I threw an absolute tantrum, and that's not okay. I had to apologize to my kids.
Like,
this is not how adults should act. But yeah. I mean, I was so upset. And those are the moments where I just freak out, when I think something really insane has happened that is an obvious miss. When the really crazy things happen, like Mahomes just losing the football, I just sink down in shock, and I don't talk for like 10 minutes.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the game. Chris yeah. Jones was the first guy you wrote about. Is this his best performance?
I think so, yeah. I made sure to chart his snaps. And the way that I tried to frame it was, I've seen games where he has had that many pass rush wins, and a few games where a few other guys, now it's incredibly rare, have had that many pass rush wins. I've seen games like that before. I've also seen games where players have drawn that many effective double teams and drawn that much attention to open things up for everyone else. I've never for any player, and I'm sure it's happened, but I have never seen a game where both happened at that rate, where a player drew so much attention from the opposing team, where they threw so many resources at stopping him, but he still got so many wins, so many pressures, so many hits, so many big time plays. It is probably the best defensive performance I've ever really reviewed and charted out. It was incredible.
How much of it was the backup offensive lineman? How much of it was Chris Jones?
It's tough to say, of course, just because, you know, you've got to account for quality of opponent. Because of the amount of attention they were paying to him, though, like, an easy play to point to. The last defensive play of the first half, right, where Burrow has to throw too early, throws to the right side. Great coverage on the outside, but also there's just nowhere to go with the ball, and he's got to get it out. Jones runs through two offensive linemen, and you can say, oh, they're backups. These are still NFL-caliber offensive linemen that are one week removed from blowing up the Buffalo Bills. So it's not like, you know, this isn't high school. This isn't even college where there's like these complete scrubs on the field. If you are double teamed as an NFL player, odds are you're not going anywhere because these are professional offensive linemen. And I've never seen a player blow up double teams as many times as he did that game. It was freakish. I do think it's obviously going to play a role, especially when they started scheming up with their alignment some one-on-one looks for him. That's going to play a role for sure. And I think that's where, you know, looking forward to the Eagles, can he win those one-on-one contests at that same rate? I don't know. He's always won one-on-ones at a really high rate. And so to me, the more interesting question is, will the Eagles try to scheme up just to stop him, or are they going to count on their exceptional offensive line to do it one-on-one?
We all saw the shot of him with the tears down his cheeks during the anthem. Is there any chance, is it too poetic to think he knew what was about to happen?
I really think I could have sworn, and I haven't gone back and watched like the broadcast like this, I could have sworn after he had that last sack and he sat down and they panned him on the bench, I could have sworn it looked like his face was wet there too. I think this meant a lot to him, and I think he knew he had a chance to really reverse some unfair narratives about him. And just I've never seen anyone blow up a narrative so completely, like just leaving absolutely no doubt. It was so much fun to watch.
With all that emotion spent, with all the Chiefs had to hear from the Bengals, from the Cincinnati mayor, just listening around town, listening to us talk about it, about three straight wins and how bad it'll be if they lose. I know it's the Super Bowl. Everybody gets up for the Super Bowl, blah, 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 blah. How much do you worry that the tank is on empty, that game meant so much that they have a hard time, you know, getting back up for this Eagles team?
I would honestly, for as focused as a lot of their guys are, I would be a little worried about that if it weren't for the bye week. I think that really allows time for you really can celebrate for a day or two. You know what I mean? Like you're not, you know, immediately back in meetings to where it affects your preparation quite as much. And I know they were doing a lot of their install this week. But it's just you have a minute to exhale and really get your mind right. And there's enough distractions Super Bowl week as it is to remind you what a massive stage it is. So I'm not too worried about it. If it were like the divisional round to the AFC Championship, that would worry me a little bit. But I think when you combine that extra time with the fact that Andy Reid is known universally as being the same guy all the time, so you know you're going to get the same approach from him. And I think Mahomes, Kelsey, they've been to a Super Bowl and lost. They know what that feels like. And they know it doesn't feel great. And so I think this team is a team that's led by three superstars. And all three of them know what it feels like to go to the biggest game and lose. And they know the sour taste that leaves in your mouth because it's such a rare opportunity. They also know how hard it is to get there. So I'm not too worried about it. I think Reed, Mahomes, Kelsey, Jones, I think they're going to keep them focused, along with a bunch of kind of new, hungry guys. You know, Justin Reed's never been in this position before. And, you know, I mean, I think they're going to be able to stay focused.
How much has Michael Dana flashed on tape to you?
You know what? Every week, man, he keeps getting better. Like, just incrementally, he's still not someone that I would quite give that, you know, much sought after dude designation that we're always looking for. They need a second dude, but he's getting close. He's winning the one-on-ones that he gets at a higher rate than an average. He plays his butt off. He tackles well. The switching him to play from the interior a lot more often and the work Joe Cullen has done with him has been just terrific. And what a find by Veach to not just find a guy who's an okay rotational guy. That alone late in the draft is great. That's a great find. But now a guy who is an active contributor to your pass rush rotation, that's just a terrific find. I think if you take the entirety of the season, I think he's been the second best pass rusher on the team.
Incredible. By the way, we're talking to Seth Kizer here in the program. Incredible the way the three rookie corners played. They're all growed up after what they just did against the Bengals. But how concerned are you about Snead maybe not being ready for the next game?
It's definitely a big concern. He's maybe their best cover corner. I think McDuffie might be their best cover corner. But Snead has such a vast array of skill sets. I mean, he does so many things so well. I'm less worried than I was watching the way Williams stepped up, how well Watson played. I do think that Snead, along with McDuffie, is a better matchup, particularly for Smith, than either Watson or Williams. Just Smith is so slick and he's so quick, and that's something that Snead and McDuffie are a little better built to handle. So I'm worried, but hopefully he can come back, just because anytime, you know, we've talked about before, when you bump another guy in at the top, that knocks everyone down one level to where now you're not expecting Josh Williams to be a full-time player. You're expecting him to be a very good part-time player. You know, if Josh Williams is your third corner, you're like, oh, I'm not sure just yet. If he's your fourth corner, you're set. Same with Jalen Watson. Second corner, I'm not quite sure, but I think he'll be okay. Third corner, hey, that's great. So I would be worried if they couldn't use him because he varies what they can do so much and because he just adds that talent to the top of the cornerback group.
Yeah, Snead is just like Chris Jones in the sense that he's got 1 year left on his deal. I don't think he's in position to hold out, right, with that 1 year left like Chris Jones may be. I don't know how far he'd get. And did the performance of the young guys make it easier for the Chiefs to say, you know, because there's been some thought, okay, Snead will be cheaper than Jones. Maybe you walk on Jones, trade Jones, sign Snead. Did that game, Snead going down, four snaps in, Chris Jones blowing everything up, did that change the perspective? And since we got a bye week here, let's look over the horizon a little bit. Did that change your perspective on how you would go about, you know, which guy you're going to allocate money towards?
Not for me, because for me, you've talked to me about this. I've always been, Jones is a unique player. There's really no one else like him in the NFL right now, and you keep him. And you figure it out. And with Snead, I'm curious what the market is with him. And with him, he's not a at all cost guy, but I do think he's a guy you can pay because he's a competent corner who can do a variety of things. And so for him, it's more of a it depends. But for me, it doesn't necessarily change the analysis because that's really where I was always at, that Jones really should be the top priority.
Speaking of which, a guy that maybe was going to be on the cutting block was Marquez Valdes-Scantling. They had everybody go down on the receiving core, and he stepped up huge. You know, don't we have to ask the question, where's this all the time?
You know, I think I've had a few people ask me that, and part of it, I think, and I could be wrong here, I'd have to go back and really review every coverage snap and all that stuff. I think teams still play quite a bit of too high against the Chiefs, and you just haven't seen Valdes-Scantling featured a ton. I think he's a streaky player. And so you're not going to get that from him week in and week out. And that's often with guys who are average or above average players, which is a compliment, not an insult. It's not that they're always average or above average. It's that their ebbs and flows come back to that spot. And so, you know, like if you are Travis Kelce and you are an awesome, 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 awesome player, your dips are still better than most players' best, right? But when you're an above-average player, you're going to dip down to below average sometimes, and then sometimes you're going to have a really fantastic game. I just think it was a perfect combination of need combined with them exploiting Cincinnati's coverages. They chose to play single high with man coverage, which is the plan against the Chiefs, right? Make everyone except Kelce beat you, especially with all their receivers hurt. And the problem with that, with doing that with single high, is Valdez-Scantling has the perfect skill set to exploit that because he can get open deep. And that's really where you saw it. And then obviously he had a couple of really gutsy plays that aren't the sort that he normally makes. I wouldn't count on him to make, you know, a bunch of yards after catch plays or contested catches. I would count on him, though, to be able to continue to force defenses to play you honest deep. And I think there's definitely a big value in that for any team.
Would it empower you to move on from Juju Smith-Schuster?
I think the biggest factor in Juju Smith-Schuster, besides price, is Sky Moore. Their skill set, to me, and Sky Moore has a way to go, like, you know, they're not saying he could plug in immediately, but their skill set, to me, looks a little bit redundant based on what I see. And so I think that's going to be the big thing there. And then the other thing I think will be cost.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true of all the guys, right? Like, if your right. number, if you can get it, you know, you're more power to you to go after it. But I think now, especially if they win, this front office has got to be empowered to be like, this is as far as we'll go, and then it gets real easy to move on with the success they've had this year after moving on from Tyreek Hill and the success all those draft picks have had for him. I mean, they ought to feel pretty confident. We got a number. It's a big number. We'll go to that big number. But if you go beyond that, then we're moving on.
I think so, too. I think seeing what Mahomes can do with a competent group, as long as it's got some depth to it, and then also seeing how young receivers are able to come in and contribute early more and more, although, again, you know, with Sky Moore, that hasn't quite been the case, although, hey, hats off to him for the punt return. That was awesome. But I think you really want to be cautious with this wide receiver market about overpaying for a certain type of player. For me, Juju Smith-Schuster is similar to MVS. I think he's a little better player, but he's still a niche player. He does certain things and he does them well, but he's not, you know, an all over the field winner. And I think that has to matter in terms of how you approach that, because you can't utilize him perfectly in every situation, and that should affect how much you should offer for someone. And so, yeah, I think that's how you approach it, especially when you've got a Mahomes and you've got a good offensive line, you've got Andy Reid, and Travis Kelce is still playing as well as he's playing.
Real quick, we've talked for 17 minutes here, and now I ask you about Patrick Mahomes in about a minute, because I got to get the final four in here as well. Just your thoughts about how Patrick Mahomes played. Maybe one thing, we've got next week to discuss it as well, but one thing that jumped out at you as to his performance, beyond just the guts and the drive and all that, but maybe something the folks didn't see that your film review showed you.
I think Tony Romo hit on it, but I'd just emphasize how under control he played. He knew he couldn't play as big as he normally does, and he adjusted. His footwork was smaller. His reads were quick. He genuinely took whatever was available there. I don't think we see that from Patrick Mahomes with that injury in 2018. Against that defense. I think it just demonstrated what a better quarterback he's become.
Yeah, that's amazing. Let's get to our final four with Seth Kizer here. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you've got a New Year's resolution to get in better shape, they can help you out. That's right, the Sports Medicine and Performance Center. Right there at about 125th and Antioch offers classes like the personal training classes. You start with a biomechanical assessment that helps the trainer design a program that's specific to your needs, your goals. The trainer then provides one-on-one instruction, including proper form, execution of each exercise, everything you need to keep that New Year's resolution. You can get it right now. Make sure you go to kansashealthsystem.com/sportsperformance to get more details. Seth, I'll start you with this. Just yes or no. Is Brady done?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'm in agreement with that one. All right. Will you be going to Arizona?
No.
No. Don't want to go, 5, 6, 7, 8K for a ticket?
I'm not that kind of lawyer.
Okay. Fantastic.
I love it. Will you see the movie? We've got a new movie that is being advertised every single break of every single show that at least I watch, which is pretty much all sports. Will you be seeing Knock at the Cabin?
You know, I think at this point, I think I'm contractually obligated to as someone who covers football. So probably. Okay. You never know with M. Night. Every now and then he hits one out of the park.
Yeah, I agree. I'm hoping this is one because I'm kind of intrigued by it. And finally, on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your fear of Sean Payton going to the Broncos?
About a 3. This iteration of the Broncos, they don't have a lot of assets, and Wilson does not look like someone that can just be fixed to me.
Yeah, I agree. That's kind of where I'm at. I might bump it to a 4, a little bit more, that maybe they start splashing around cash and piece it together. But I'm with you. It's not a 5-alarm fire by any stretch of the imagination. Seth, you're the man, buddy. Great stuff. Look forward to the conversation next week when we'll be chewing on our nails, chomping at the bit, waiting for the game to start. We will be reading the Chief of the North newsletter. Must read for the fans out there. Check it out. Seth Kaiser from The Athletic. Thank you very much, Seth, buddy. We'll talk next week.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. How many NFL teams have been in their current stadium more consecutive seasons than the Chiefs?
I'll tell you, I nailed
so consecutive
this one.
Would take the Bears out because right. They had to play in Champaign while they were remodeling.
And
that.
They played in Soldier Field for a while. Didn't how, return to
how
or
many,
Wrigley Field, I mean.
What's the Chiefs' number?
50.
Well,
51,
the Packers.
51 seasons.
Packers and Lambeau.
By 15 years.
Like I know Soldier Field's older, but I'm thinking that might be it. What could I be missing here?
You're not missing anything.
Yeah, that's it.
It's the Packers.
Just it. Green Bay.
Yep. Buffalo's stadium was built in 1973, so they're 1 year short of the Chiefs. Curly Lambeau, born on this date. Odd departure point for that question, but it got Lambeau in it. Joe's KC Barbecue, man.
Playing for wonderful Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Get you some on the way home tonight. Joe'sKC.com. 47th and Mission, 119th and Strangline, 117th and Row. The wonderful Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. World's best fries, best barbecue. Get you some Joe's. You can send it anywhere in the country. I'm telling you, if you're in sales, send some Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. You will be a rock star. Believe me. You will be a rock star.
Have either of you gentlemen been to that stadium?
I have not. There was talk of going. Let me pose this question. We'll make this the kicker then. Is Arrowhead Lambeau-esque? Now that they're winning championships, like forever there was no playoff success. It would make it really easy to walk away. Is Arrowhead become an iconic destination? Make a trip. You fans will come here because it's legendary Arrowhead Stadium now that Patrick Mahomes has played in that stadium, done what he's done, especially if he adds another championship?
I would say probably not because, I mean, is Gillette Stadium Tom Brady won a lot of championship games and Super Bowls playing there. I don't know that you can make that the loudest stadium.
I think the fans add to it. The tailgating adds to it. Is that so precious it can't be given up? Is that something that draws people? Based upon the get-in-the-door price of $295 for the game here and almost $600 in Philadelphia, the answer would be no. But
good point.
Something to think about as we approach the end of the lease.